And I guess I've got this kind of thing about general perception or the general like mechanism of sports in today's culture that I'm like, all of the sports are kind of, you know, massive sales and marketing machines, and they are what they are. I guess the thing that would be loving to change is if those athletes for me should be kind of, you know, less marketable. And like, I think if we had some Eastern philosophy about sport, it like they're a bit more guru-like, right? It's like kind of, it's very amazing that they're able to align themselves to these high physical performing acts of excellence. And it requires absolute internal stillness and calm and confidence. And I just think we don't like look to the true magic of sports. I think we like look at the celebrity and the drama and the big bug and the celebs and the private jets and the sponsors and the deals and the live golf payouts. And I just think, oh, that kind of, that's not what I see in golf. That's the true beautiful stuff. Like, I think like what I see in golf is the real magic.
Hi, and welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, where deep, meaningful, and philosophical conversations about golf and life are par for the course. We're big on the belief that golf is good for you here at Golf Yourself Healthy. If you are also of that belief, you are in the right place. This is the podcast for you. I'd like to welcome you back, our repeat listeners, our existing members of the Golf Yourself Healthy community. Really appreciate your listenership and your support. It's not lost on me that out there in the golf media and the golf podcasting world, there is a plethora of golf podcasts out there. And so the fact that you've chosen to listen to this one means a lot to me personally, and it's great to have you on board. If you are a new listener, welcome along. Hope you enjoy it. I hope you choose to follow us and stay and grow on this journey with us as we look to grow Golf Yourself Healthy, which is coming up for its four-month anniversary in just a few weeks from now. Before I get into introducing today's episode and today's guest, I typically like to do is ask you kindly if, once you are done listening to today's episode, to leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice. Generally speaking, we are available across all of the major podcasting platforms, and it tends to be really quite easy and really quick to leave us a five-star review and a comment. Like I've said many times before, if ultimately, you know, whatever review you leave us, give us the review that you feel is warranted. And what's especially important and really valuable to us at Golf Yourself Healthy is not just the rating itself that you give, but it's actually the comments that you offer as well. You have two options for doing that, really. You can either use your podcast platform, as I mentioned, to leave your rating and your written review, and or you can head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com, where you can go to the contact tab and contact me directly. My contact details are there. There's an option to fill in a box even and just send it through automatically. If you're going to choose that option, what would be really amazing is just for you to drop in maybe one thing that you love about the podcast and that you feel we're doing well, and maybe another thing you think we could do differently, we could do better, or even something that's an idea that has come to mind for you in terms of further enhancing and continuing the growth of Golf Yourself Healthy, so that you, the listener, the community member, can get even more out of this than you already are. Let's say a few words on today's episode and today's guest. I'm delighted in today's conversation to be joined by Rob Jans, who is someone who I was connected to by our mutual friend Simon Pope at Cleve Hill Golf Club in Cheltenham. If you are a regular listener to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, you'll have heard me wax lyrical a few times now about Cleve Hill Golf Club. And in actual fact, I'm heading there tomorrow to play a round with a friend I've made who is a member there and works there. The place is really cool, really special. And as actually Rob and I talk about in this conversation, Cleve Hill is really at the forefront of some of the really cool stuff, the alternative stuff that's going on in the golf space at the moment. And so, a word of gratitude to Simon for having connected Rob to me. Ultimately, when I first launched Golf Yourself Healthy, and I was talking to people about this belief that golf is good for you, golf is a spiritual experience, which, again, it's not lost on me that to some people hearing that sentence, golf is a spiritual activity, golf is a spiritual experience, that may not sit totally right with everyone. It might feel a bit abstract, a bit out there, a bit woo-woo. That's my personal belief. And what's so great, I think, about Golf Yourself Healthy is the way in which we believe that golf is good for us, whether that's me, my guests, or you, the listeners, that can look, feel, sound really different. There can be different versions of that for everyone. So let's bear with this and go with it, because ultimately, when I spoke to Simon at Cleve Hill about golf being this kind of spiritual activity, it's a mindful activity, it's good for you. One of the first people he mentioned to me who he thought would be worth my while talking to was Rob, who has recently, as we will talk about in this conversation, started a golf brand, a golf community, a golf product. Smile Golf is the name of his brand. And Smile is doing some, Rob and Smile are doing some really cool things. One of the main things we, amongst many, many other things we talk about in this conversation, and really the one of the things really piqued my interest when I was introduced to Rob in the first place, was how he makes golf scorecards, or rather mindfulness training aids, as he describes them, which help golfers build better training habits, but crucially, they encourage golfers to record and tap into what they're feeling out in the golf course, rather than simply how many shots they took to get the ball in the cup. Rob and I speak about the early days of him building the Smile brand and the community which he is building around it. We also talk about the global evolution and transformation which golf is currently undergoing, and how, despite some of the noise and disruption we see in the elite professional side of the game, the future is truly bright in the recreational side of golf. For me, though, most pointedly, what I valued so much about this conversation with Rob was the story he tells about how, following a really challenging time in his life, he's rediscovered a love for golf, and as he puts it, has a reinvented relationship with the game, having taken around a 15-plus year hiatus from a game which he adored in his childhood. I am going to, in today's episode, spare you the end of the show takeaways section, because ultimately I just reflected on how, when you listen to a Golf Yourself Healthy episode, we cover so many things, and you will invariably take different things away from the conversation. There will be different things that resonate with you more than they might resonate with someone else. And that I love, and that is brilliant. And again, that is why I'm going to ask you to go to golfyourselfhealthy.com, head to the contact tab, and get in touch with me. Tell me what you're enjoying about this podcast, and equally, give me your ideas. What kind of guests do you want? What kind of topics do you want us to cover? It's all up for grabs. Anyway, enough from me. Let's head straight into the conversation. Rob Jans, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, my friend. How are you? Assuming you are in Barcelona today, where you reside. Am I correct in that assumption?
You are correct, yes. Sat at home in Barcelona. I'm doing very well, thank you. Very good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. And although...
I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for the conversation too. And I know it's going to be a good one. I know that we're not going to... You know, this is going out in audio only, but I feel it's kind of important that the listener gets a sense of just how chill and how nice your kitchen and your background looks. There's a very nice looking coffee machine that I can think I can see over your shoulder. So no, it's good. And it looks like the sun is shining through your window today, which is better than was the last time when we spoke the other week. There was quite a lot of rain in Barcelona last time we saw. So
Good for the golf course.
Yeah. Well, anyway, look, now that I've got the customary British weather chat out of the way, let's get into some more golf and life themed chat. So, Rob, as you know, we like to start Golf Yourself Healthy conversation with asking our guest the spirit of their game. And I suppose this really is a spirit of their game of golf and how they got into golf and kind of, you know, what golf means to them. But it's even a broader thing around what's the spirit of your golf and your life as well. So just tell us a bit about your golf and a bit about yourself.
Okay. Yeah. So the spirit of my game, I guess, probably doesn't come from when I learned the game originally and how I got into it. And you know, like the early days and how it started. which was with the family. I learned with my brother, my dad, my granddad, and my uncle was a pro golfer. So it was just very much like a family sport. It was one of the big activities that was, that we did as kids. Dad was into all sorts of sports and played a lot of sports, my brother and I growing up. Most of them to like a reasonably decent standard, you know, nothing like elite level, but like every sport we kind of messed around with, we played reasonably well. And like that included table tennis and ping pong and badminton and cricket and all kinds of things. And yeah, sport was just a big part of like the household growing up. Played a lot as a junior, got down to like a fairly low single figure handicap golfer and was like playing reasonably competitively, like in junior league scene growing up. And it was a lot of fun. Like golf was a lot of fun growing up as a kid, growing up as a junior. I think anyone who's my sort of age, I'm 41 now, so I was born early 80s. And the vibe back then was very different in golf. The clubhouses, the golf courses where I was a member at, and the kind of culture of those golf courses was very different. They were a lot more stuffy. They were a lot more old-fashioned. There was a lot more of that lingering old-fashioned culture, which is all rapidly changing in the game right now and is just completely transforming. But yeah, I grew up in that era. And so golf definitely wasn't cool. And, you know, it certainly wasn't the kind of sort of thing that you would want to talk about at school and let be known publicly at school and that kind of thing. You know, that was something that was part of my family life. And yeah, it really wasn't very cool. And no one else that I knew golfed. And yeah, it was kind of an insular thing in the club. And yeah, I was a reasonable golfer. I guess a lot of my fond memories growing up as a kid were like when we would mess around. I do kind of like have these like vague, long rolling memories of like summers when I was growing up as a junior where we would play like 36 holes a day and we would kind of like really mess around in the afternoon. And it was very like carefree and fun. And we would do stupid tournaments and we would try and hit outrageous shots. And we would play cross country holes where we would go from like the fifth tee to the ninth green and things like that. And we would just really be really, really silly out there. And we'd spend hours out there and, you know, mum and dad would drop us off there in the morning and we'd spend entire days there. And we'd do that for days on end in the summer holidays. And that was like a lot of fun. I guess it got less fun as it got less competitive. I think, yeah, it was harder and the expectations were higher. I'm of mixed race as well. So my dad's from Malaysia and my mum is British. Yeah, I've got a very much like an Asian father. He was quite strict. He was quite demanding. He had high standards. So like growing up and competing was like, yeah, challenging and could be quite difficult. So yeah, I had this kind of like mixed relationship, I guess, with it growing up, right? Where there was parts that I loved. And when I was messing around with mates, hitting silly flop shots, going over bunkers and being, you know, trying and playing around with the game, it was loads of fun and really great and free and liberating. And then there was this other kind of side to it that was a bit like, well, I don't want to really talk about it outside of the golf course and it's not very cool. And all the old men in the bar after golf are not kind of like the necessarily the characters you want to hang around with. You're in your kid and you're sort of like, you know, they weren't great places to hang out when you were younger necessarily. So yeah, kind of like a bit of a mixed relationship, I would say.
Yeah. So I got that right. You said that golf got less fun as it got less competitive. Did I hear you?
As it got more competitive.
As it got more competitive, sorry. Right, okay. And just so you, I mean, as I mentioned at the top of this conversation, you know, you're living in Spain now. And so I guess, you know, we'll probably get into this in the course of the conversation, but I almost want to cut straight to today and where you, Rob, find yourself in your relationship with golf today. You know, given that introduction you had to it and getting to a good standard, you know, what is golf to you today then?
So yeah, like fast forward however many years, 20 odd years, 20 plus years, yeah, living and working in Spain for 14 years now. I had a lot of, following that introduction to the game, I had a long absence. I kind of like stopped playing at 18. I think I played my first year of university golf and then I kind of like just let the game go by the wayside and kind of real life started to happen to me in university and the growing up process and golf wasn't around as much. And I think like a lot of people in the UK, when you go into university culture, there's you know, some drinking and some partying and some other things in life start to take priority over maybe your hobbies. And, you know, I'm sure it's a fairly typical story. So yeah, and then you start to like, you know, live on your own and make friends and go out and socialize and study and try and learn. And you're on this kind of like journey. I wasn't playing golf and I gave it up for, I don't think I touched a club for, let's just say 15 years, 16 years, something like that. I maybe played an occasional round of golf somewhere in there. Played at my brother's wedding, for example. You know, so there would have been the odd occasion during that period where I picked up a golf club. But I think from university, I kind of just left it completely alone for, 15, 16 years, something like that. And then I guess a few years ago, 3 years ago or so, I started to get back into the game. Yeah, I went and picked up clubs one day, went out and played some golf. Had a fairly profound experience with it and have been, kind of like reinventing my relationship with the game since for the last 3 years and getting back to playing a lot. But having a very, very different relationship to that one that I had at the start. Yeah, very different to the origin story. And I guess the bit that we're not touching on is the 18, there was 15 years in between where, real life happens and all of the things that did happen in that period led to me, coming back to golf with a very different view of it and looking at it in a very different light and kind of, reinventing what is now, I would say, going back to the original question, a different spirit of the game. Yeah.
Okay. So, do you want to expand on that? Like the relationship that you have with golf today, just reflecting the words you've just used, reinventing my relationship, a profound experience. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah. So, I guess to me right now, golf is a little bit of a path that I'm following. I guess there's a spiritual element to it now. I guess there's this wellness element to it now. And I think basically it's a meditative practice almost. I'd say in the very, very recent weeks, I've started having a lot more, say weeks and months. I'd say over the last 6 weeks or so. And things have been picking up a little bit with the brand I'm doing. And I've been playing a lot more golf with people, a lot more social golf. And I'm playing a lot more lots of new people. And I'm getting involved in various communities and starting to meet people, make friends in the game. And that's great. But I would say before that, it was a very meditative practice. So coming back to it and the profound experience, I opened a restaurant in 2015 in Barcelona. And that kind of, that was envisaged with the idea that we would open a restaurant, get rich, make loads of money, retire early, play lots of golf. And I think the reality didn't quite pan out exactly as we had imagined it, as we'd envisioned it. But fast forward all those years, and we are actually starting to arrive at that point where my business partner and I play lots of golf together, and we're starting to rekindle that. So that's great. But I opened a restaurant 8 years ago, and that ate up a very large portion of me for the 5 years that I worked there, getting it open, getting it off the ground, building it. And after 5 years or so of relentless work in the restaurant, and very little downtime and very few other things going on in my life apart from work, I was kind of a little bit burnt out. And so it was at that time that I kind of out of nowhere took the decision to take myself to the golf course and go for a long walk. And I did that one day. And I guess that profound experience was a very kind of, hot summer's afternoon, walking around playing 36 holes of golf in King's Golf with no one else on the golf course. On a very hot day, the Spaniards were definitely not golfing in that temperature. They're not that silly, but I took myself out for a long walk, played the course in near silence on my own, and had that very profound return to the game that I was like, okay, cool, this can be really good for me. This is what I need. Yeah. And so it seemed to be this meditative escape, which I know is for an awful lot of people as well. And obviously you and I have been connected for, I think, exactly that same reason, that I think it provides an awful lot to an awful lot of people. And a lot of us feel a lot better when we do it for various reasons. And it certainly helps still.
Well, look, let's go to that, because I think you've kind of just alluded to how you and I have been connected. And if I give a bit of background to that, because actually on this podcast, I've talked a bit about my experiences up at and meeting people, golfers up at Cleeve Hill in Cheltenham, or in and around Cheltenham in England. And I described Cleeve Hill as quite a spiritual, otherworldly place. And you and I were connected through Simon Pope, who is the manager up there, who runs the place. Fine. And I remember when I was sat having coffee with Simon, speaking about Golf Yourself Healthy and everything that this stands for and the vision and everything. And one of the first people and brands that he mentioned was you and Smile Golf. And I will just in a minute just ask you to expand on what that is, what it's all about, you know, what you're hoping to do with it. But I just remember him talking about it, and I just thought, wow, I need to speak to this guy, because actually, for amongst other reasons, when I hear people like you talking about golf in the terms and using the vocabulary that you use to describe it, has for me personally so far been quite a rare experience, right? I find myself out here in this podcasting space, throwing my voice out there and wondering, am I talking about golf in really woo-woo terms and it's going to turn people off? But actually, I'm encouraged that there are, you know, people like you out there that see it, that experience it and consume it in a similar way to what I do. So I'm grateful that we're connected on that basis, Rob. But, you know, do you want to talk about Smile Golf then and help the listener understand what it is and what it's all about?
Yeah, right. That was one of the first things that I think that we talked about on the phone in our first conversation was like, and you'll hear it now, even I'm sure post-edit, like me diving straight into the spiritual word where you just go like, yeah, what's golf to you now? It's like essentially spiritual. Like, and it's not always the vocabulary that's, you know, your confidence like put out there necessarily. I'm certainly not, but I mean, yeah, in real time, personally, on a personal level, that's what it is to me. And we mentioned in our first conversation, you know, it's very humbling for me to speak to someone like you who's also got your connection or your path that's led you to this situation where you've had to find some kind of spirituality. You know? You've had to look for something and go like, oh yeah, I need to find some meat on the bone, some more like, yeah, something a bit more in things and in life. And so to do that, golf is a very interesting vehicle. And there's lots of other really interesting vehicles, you know. That's, I think, pretty much all hard physical pursuits are interesting spiritual vehicles to kind of like go on that journey. I did quite a lot of rock climbing as well, and there's definitely a spiritual element to that as well, and flow state to it and all this kind of stuff, which is like, yeah, and I don't think, yeah, when you talk about vocabulary and talking about it and what words we use to describe it, like, yeah, they're not always words that I'm massively comfortable to use. And as I, you know, introducing it, there's going to be a bit of hesitancy. There's going to be a pause before I say the word spiritual because, yeah, it's not always comfortable to like throw it out there and talk about it in those terms. And it's, yeah, it's great to be able to share it with you as well. So, yeah, Smile Golf, what is it? What's it about? I guess it's ever evolving and ever changing. And it's like I'm a little wave that I'm surfing and I just roll with it and see where it takes me. But yeah, it's been going for 3 years or so, I guess. I'm a dreadful content creator. I'm like really bad at it. I don't enjoy it. It's not what I want to do with my time. The little good content that I do have is all I care to my partner, my girlfriend, who takes the pictures, and she's an amazing photographer. So fortunately, I've got some like excellent photography and absolutely nothing else. I think this will be the first audio of me out there. So there you go. This is like, I don't think I've even done audio stuff before. So yeah, I'm not great at, you know, putting the camera on myself and like, you know, really building an Instagram following or any of that kind of stuff. That's definitely not my strength. With the little work that I have done on Instagram and the quality of the photography that I've got, like the people that I have connected with in the golf community, including Simon, have all been really lovely, really interesting, incredibly positive. It's a really interesting little like concept of like these sub communities and these social networks and these niche communities. So I mean, golf is a larger thing, is you know, huge, and then it splits out into all these like kinds of like sub categories of like, you know, little niches and, you know, little hickory golfers with their clubs and, you know, little like whatever other little niches of the sport there are, and the long drive guys that are kind of behind the Bryson DeChambeaus and the YouTubers, and there's a million different kind of offshoots of what golf is to people. Whenever I've reached out and whenever anybody has reached out to me on Instagram, the connection has been like really, really positive. And so it's just kind of slowly evolving. I try and say yes to stuff and just do anything that I can. But I guess I started Smile originally as a way to kind of like act as a small personal diary, a small personal blog to kind of remind me of certain things, certain paths that I want to stick to, certain practices I want to try and maintain in my life, and a certain amount of discipline. And so I kind of like set it up with this idea of being able to like check myself by regularly checking where I'm at with golf and regularly doing something for it to make sure that I'm, you know, keeping up some constant practice and having that, what is essentially a spiritual practice. I do a little bit of yoga. I do a little bit of meditation, and those are other practices. I do my climbing as well, which I also again, has elements of spirituality to it for sure. And I try and keep up all those practices. And so I was just essentially a kind of a diary of that for the majority of time that I've been doing it, essentially. As I said, over the last month or so, I've just kind of like, things have started to pick up a little bit. I guess I'm putting it out there more. I guess I'm just like talking to people more. The first people that I met in the golf industry were all UK-based. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the UK. Obviously, a lot of interesting stuff happening all over the world, you know, from like Japan to the US and everywhere in between, like between, I guess. But, you know, like the UK's got some really interesting golf brands coming out. It's got some Clean Hill guys are doing amazing work. I think like the culture's changing there. It's just on a very interesting path. It's obviously part of that bigger global transformation that golf's going through, but a lot of the people I've had in the early days were in the UK, and there wasn't much going on here in Barcelona, to be honest. There's not much kind of this, maybe just like, you know, young, modern, hip golf brand going on in Barcelona. And I guess over the last month or so, I've just been talking a lot more openly in Barcelona. You know, as I said, I've got a restaurant here, so I'm like kind of in the hospitality industry, and just started to put it out there, and turns out there's lots of people who are silent golfers in Barcelona, who are all just like, you know, doing their thing and playing a little bit of golf and play at various different clubs and courses around the, like around Catalonia. And they're also kind of like looking for this like younger, cooler, hipper kind of community, this global phenomenon that's going on in the golf world right now, this transformation. And, you know, there's not a huge scene for it here in Barcelona. There's definitely some interesting people here that are starting to show interest. So yeah, I held a little event recently. We had just an incredible turnout, and we had some amazing people show up, and it was a very, very good vibe. It was a lot of fun. Felt really good for me to get back into that kind of hospitality space, which is where I was working day to day for a long time. And I guess I feel quite natural and definitely have some like nostalgic feelings for. So it was a lot of fun to host an event and do that. And I think, we're just starting to, I guess, sort of think about realizing something a bit more physical in Barcelona in terms of an actual community, meetups, potentially a venue. And so we're kind of on this little path now. Got a couple of people and friends involved from the industry. So yeah, it's catching an exciting time where, you know, we were talking maybe 3 or 4 months ago, we certainly wouldn't have been having these conversations, and it might have had a slightly different tone. But yeah, I feel like Smile is kind of just changing shape a little bit right now. And we'll see what it becomes. But yeah, I'm excited and just digging deeper into golf. And as I said, trying to say yes to stuff and just try and be a bit more open to things. We'll see what goes there. Let's see. Watch this space, buddy.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to watching the space, and I'm excited for you. And I'm just going to reflect on a few of the things you said there. I mean, the very first thing that strikes a chord with me is what you're saying about your lack of enjoyment around content creation. You know, I think it's funny because, well, for one, you know, I very much rely on my wife, for example, who's an architect and is very much the creative flair in our relationship. You know, there's a charity golf day that I'm going to do for a baby loss charity coming up in about a month's time. And I was on Canva yesterday trying to like piece this thing together. I'm like, I need to tap out. This is stressing me out. Where is Kim when I need her kind of thing to keep, you know, make it look good? But in all seriousness, I think this is an important reflection. I believe in terms of the journey that, say, I'm on, and perhaps you're on too, in relation to, you know, because I've spent prior to this point about 10 plus years in a corporate environment where I've got like a infrastructure of people around me who are SMEs or specialists in a certain subject matter. And then when, I don't know if you could relate to this, Rob, but then when you start, you have let's humor ourselves and call ourselves startups for a second here, you know, then it's kind of, you know, it takes you out of your comfort zones, right? You know, and does that resonate with you?
Yeah. I think the content creation stuff as well. So if we go back to like that bit of life that, you know, happened in between post-university, getting a job, working. Yeah, living and working in London, I did go into that corporate world. Didn't love it. Didn't stay there very long. And yeah, I'm not a huge fan of screens. I do some like web work. I do see some like self-taught design work. I have a few clients and it's some things that I do to earn a little bit of extra cash. But the restaurant, when the opportunity came up to open the restaurant, like I was really aware that the thing that attracted me the most about it was the human element and the contact and the the physical like reality of it and the vibe of it. Because when you're in a restaurant and when you're in these like specialized hospitality places, like you can really create a vibe, like you can create very different atmospheres. And a Friday night is going to be very different to perhaps like a Tuesday night vibe. But it's important that you learn to create both of those kind of ambiences or and lots of ambiences in between. Like I love the human stuff. I like being around people. I do miss it. Yeah. It's the screen time that I don't like. I just don't like being on the device. And I do as little screen time work as I possibly can. It's just not my thing. I know it's a necessary evil in this day and age. It's part of the way the world works, and it's to whatever degree it's necessary. And I do understand that there's a lot of huge positives to it as well. So I'm not kind of just like trying to shift on it and just say it's a waste of time. It can be done incredibly well, and there's lots of people that I enjoy following and I learn a lot from. And it's just not for me. I think the human stuff is where I feel a lot happier, and I feel a lot more kind of like enriched and a lot more like alive, I guess. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I enjoy it an awful lot more.
So given what you've just been speaking about, Rob, human connection, I want to unpick this notion of community with you and as it relates to, say, like a golfing community, right? So, you know, in the way I describe Golf Yourself Healthy vocally on my website, I talk about a community of like-minded golfers. And what I found now, with about 3 or so months under my belt of doing this, I've come to reflect on just how I think, and also the journey that the world has been on in the last 3 or 4 years with COVID, for example, and where, for instance, in my corporate job, everything was online. Everyone got thrust into working from home, and even coming out of COVID, there's like a lot of working from home. And I think what I'm sensing is there's this kind of, call it a reluctance from people to sort of socially connect online, like, you know, or also in a podcast episode will say to someone, hey, reach out to me. How are you finding the podcast? Like, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. And I've had very few people do that. And look, at the end of the day, I think people are busy. They lead busy lives. And actually my professional career and my life experience has taught me that actually, there's something fascinating about someone's inclination. I find that in minority of cases, if you take any sample group of people, that will actually take that action, which is just to write to someone and say, thank you, you've made me feel a certain way, or you've helped me. And I think I'm trying to just to get comfortable with the idea that I may be building a community with Golf Yourself Healthy in a silent way, if you get what I'm trying to say. Like, people will be silently buying into what we're trying to do at Golf Yourself Healthy. And just because people aren't getting in touch via email, or they're not following me on social media and sending me a direct message, does not mean that what we're doing resonates with them. But I'm just curious about, given what you've said and where the exciting stuff that's on the horizon for you with Smile Golf or whatever with golf and trying to build a physical community. Like, what's your take on that? That kind of that relationship or between sort of online community versus actually getting more human, because human connection thrives fundamentally in a physical environment, doesn't it?
It does, really. I think so. Like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm ever gonna excel in building an online community. So I don't think it's the skill set that I have to deliver in terms of like a purely business, like kind-minded answer to that is that, like, I think my skill set is far more apt for building a human community than it is building a digital one. So personally, that would be my preferred route. But I absolutely get what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. And I think, like, yeah, hopefully there's a, and there is, I know there is, for what even like whatever, however small my following is, I know that there are people that are silently behind me, like, that, you know, because when I have met them, yeah, apparent strangers at golf events, you're like, yeah, I'm a stranger to this person, but they go, oh, you're like, oh, great, man, yeah, I love what you do, super. And, you know, and there is that kind of like, oh, so you meet this person in real terms, and they do have some kind of like knowledge of it, and you're like, okay, cool, like that is actually, for sure, it's there and it exists, and for sure that digital realm is very positive, and yeah.
Mm.
God, good. I don't know how the algorithms work. But yeah, you don't know what's going to like just show up at the right time and the place for you in terms of that, and that you can like relate to, and that you can. And yeah, you never know who's going to reach out. Like, and I'm always surprised when people do. Like, always pleasantly surprised when people do, including like, yeah, you reaching out to me. So yeah, I think it's there and it's real. And if that digital version of my community didn't exist at all, then yeah, you and I probably wouldn't be in touch. But the fact that I do have some kind of minor thing going on there, yes, I'm sure that there will be. And I really hope that it's something that resonates with people and they like what I kind of do. And they, it's quite personal, I guess, my Instagram. It's not really a business Instagram at the moment. It's very much just my mug. It's just kind of like,
I have noticed that. And actually, though, I'm coming to believe that, again, relating to my own experience, that's probably a good thing, because I think, figuratively speaking, people buy from people, right? And I am trying to, I mean, you know, for example, because I shared it with you that I put out that kind of Golf Yourself Healthy promotional video yesterday, which is me telling my story and the story of my son and my part of my theory behind that. And also like the media company that I worked with for that were very much saying that, you know, it's the visual as well. It's like if someone can associate something with a person and actually buy into you personally, then actually I suspect that their willingness to engage and actually just engaging full stop will naturally come. And I for what it's worth, I would encourage you to keep doing what you're doing with Smile. And I would encourage my listeners to follow you with Smile, and they will see that there's a personal side to you. It's images of you. And I'm trying to channel more of that as well, which I don't know. Can I ask you, how comfortable, or rather uncomfortable, have you found being the main protagonist and putting yourself out there? Because I'm struggling with that a little bit with Golf Yourself Healthy.
Well, let's just say we also, the first conversation you had on the phone, just going back to that again, you know, we got it out of the way and off the table of, you know, how very different our circumstances personally are. And yeah, it's an amazing promotional video. It's excellent. You've got the dreamy, silky Scottish voice for it. The accent's absolutely perfect. You were literally born for podcasting with the voice. So like, yeah, it looks and sounds exceptional, but your story is very, very different to mine. And I'm, as we said on that first call, there's absolutely no comparison. There's no need for like discomfort for me to be able to like, you know, say, well, your story is way heavier than mine. All stories are valid, but I think it is a very, very, it's a lot more powerful story. It just is. And I think it's great that you put it out there. And I think that people like me, that obviously I genuinely can't relate, because that genuinely hasn't happened to me. I don't have children and I can't even begin to imagine. So there will be people that it touches that, if you know, it's going back to your like-minded community, like we don't even have to be like-minded. We can still be in that community. I will not, you know, there's people that are not necessarily like-minded to you, but your story will resonate with enormously and will affect and will challenge and will make them think. And like, I think, yeah, definitely keep putting it out there. Go for it. I'm not massively uncomfortable doing it, personally, going back to your question, but I certainly like would say you should continue going for it, because it's a pretty amazing story. It's pretty potent, and you're very pleasant and humble about it on that first conversation. But like, I think it's important to get that story out there. Do I personally feel mine is as exciting, as important? Maybe not. Do I love building a community and like working in hospitality and having those human connections? Yes. And so like, again, I'm not comparing situations, but I'm not massively uncomfortable being a protagonist. Again, I think it just comes down for me to like a case of spring time. Like I tried to manage the ego a bit as part of like all of this broader spiritual journey that I've been on since, you know, reconnecting with golf, all of the yoga and the meditation, combining it with the golf, et cetera, all of that kind of thing that I was doing. Like it's definitely a golf for me has like that mechanism of like, you can like check your ego. Like it's humbling to play golf. And so I'm not always like, you know, the kind of person that's just wanting to put, you know, be in front of the camera and promoting myself and promoting my face. But as I said, I think like the original idea of it was a bit more like a personal diary and just keep on this path, just stay on this road, just keep doing this, just keep every now and again. Don't have to go crazy. And yeah, I started dating a photographer, and like, I don't know, after a month or so of that, you pretty quickly get used to having a camera in your face. So like, it's, you just get a little bit more relaxed. You get a little bit more comfortable with it every time. And I didn't like it at the start, but she points her camera wherever she wants when she's on the golf course, and she's great to walk around with, and we have a lot of fun when we go out together. We usually go around sunset, which is when she likes to like get the light. So it's like, it's usually very pretty. And we have a nice time doing it together. And yeah, I've got more comfortable with it. I don't mind being a protagonist at all, really. But yeah, I know, it's just a terrible, I can't bother with content creation, man. It's all it is. I literally can't bother. I'd rather be playing golf. And if I'm not playing golf, I'd rather go to the climbing gym. If I'm not doing that, I'd probably do some yoga or some stretching.
If
I'm doing that, I'd probably do some breathing. Like, I just, a million things I would rather do before I, like, I really want to sit on my screen and like put this story together. Well, then I don't. I'm joking with my girlfriend. She's got various Instagrams. She's got various personal creative projects, and she's very much, as you mentioned earlier, the creative force of our partnership. But she's very gifted creatively. She's just getting into the world of reels, how complicated it is for her to make a reel and how challenging she finds it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to try one too. And literally 40 minutes later, I'm like, toss the phone. I'm like, give up.
It's a draining experience, right? It's an ordeal. Savage.
I literally can't do it. I'm 41 now. I literally can't do it. I'm out. I'm like, I give up.
Yeah. So this is an inadvertent, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm going to give an inadvertent call to action to my listeners here, Rob. If there's any budding content creators out there that want to throw me a bone and help me and help Rob, we need you. We need you. Rob, I just wanted to say, firstly, thanks for the kind words that you said about me and about this. I'm going to say now, you can put the script away. I don't want the listeners thinking like I've just put a predefined script in front of you. That was, I know it was genuine, authentic, and I thank you for that. But as I said to you at the time we spoke the other week, you know, something that I'm finding just really fascinating about the way that people are reacting to me and to Golf Yourself Healthy is just how there's this inclination that people seem to have to want to downplay their own stories, vulnerable stories and traumas, for example, because they perceive that mine is objectively more serious or, you know, better than theirs. And it just is, I do not see it that way. And I just, I think that's an important message for me to get out. But one thing I really want to get into a bit more, and part of what you're doing and offering with Smile Golf in these early stages that just fascinated me so much was these, I don't know what you would call them, Rob, but like kind of feeling scorecards or feelings cards, or can you say a bit more about them?
So I've got a little like product line, I guess. They're mindful training aids. So they're just kind of like an on-course training aid for golfers to introduce like basic mindfulness practices on the golf course. They're called habits.
Yeah.
Building golf habits. So really, it's a kind of fairly gimmicky for kind of semi-silly product line, you know. But it's just like a really personal thing that I need. I was like, I need this. Like, that's actually probably what I really need to improve my golf game. So right, yeah. So there's a series of six. Each scorecard comes with a kind of a theme. So the first one's relaxation. The second one is breath. We touch on like self-speak, self-talk, the inner voice, visualization, the mind's eye, imagination. And so there's kind of a series of these six scorecards, and it finishes one that, you know, you can build your own. And they're just little mindful exercises to do on the golf course. Think in the world of amateur golf, everyone practices swing technique. Everybody's watching YouTube videos. Everybody's got some putting drills. Everybody's got some short game drills. Everyone's working on this part of their swing. I mean, I don't feel like anybody does any mind game work. And I certainly don't do enough of it and don't use the scorecards enough personally. And that's terrible to admit. But like, it's challenging and it's hard. But I think, that's especially as you get to like the upper echelons of the sport and the elite level, but the only thing that actually separates any of the, top however many thousands of golfers in the world is probably just mind game. They can all rip a golf ball. They can all chip and putt. And I think at the elite level of the game, all that really separates is micro details like going on inside the head. And they were working with, you know, psychologists, and as they well should, and, you know, plenty of stories about that out there. But yeah, just a silly thing for amateur golfers to kind of, you know, practice on the golf course, I guess. And like, yeah, they each card comes with three very simple instructions, you know, not quite one worders, but one liners. So I think the first scorecards, the three instructions are really simple in terms of just like breathe, relax, smile. Those are the three things. Mm. And the idea is that you just refer to those throughout the round. I've got like this alternative scoring method where you actually just like, as opposed to maybe just writing the arbitrary number of like, did I make a 3 or a 6 or a 7 or 8 or a 2 or a 4 or a 6? You know, as amateur golfers do, and you're like, is this very indicative of anything? Or like, I don't know, scoring obviously is indicative of your level to some degree, but like, you know, I think if you want to like practice some stuff on the golf course, you could maybe like gauge a little bit more by your mood, by your attitude. And so it's got this kind of like rating system for how happy you are after a hole, as opposed to like what you actually score like.
I haven't used them yet, and I'm looking forward to doing so, and then, you know, sort of sharing my, you know,
it's still not in the post, I'm sorry.
That wasn't a passive aggressive way of being like, hey, have you got them in the post yet?
Yeah.
But no, genuinely, like I'm really looking forward to using them, and off, because I'll start by saying this, you know, when Simon at Cleve Hill mentioned what you're doing and mentioned these these mindful training aids, my brain just lit up. Like I just had this kind of reaction, which made me go, wow, you know, like how cool that someone, I genuinely mean that, like how cool that someone has thought to do this. And I'll share this kind of observation or this story, if you like, with you and the listener, which is, I don't know if you watch Full Swing on Netflix, season one and season two. And I really enjoyed season one, but then without doubt, the most enjoyable episode that I've watched in season two, and of all of them so far, was the one around psychology, and where you see Wyndham Clark and who's the other player that's using extensively, like Max Homa and Wyndham Clark, now talk very openly about their relationship with the psychologist, Julie, her surname escapes me at the moment, and she's interviewed in that episode as well. And then there's this amazingly fascinating kind of like juxtaposition between those guys who, you know, for one, like Wyndham Clark, for instance, they tell the story, I can't remember, but he's had trauma of some form in his family life. And he's clearly all in on this idea of psychology. He's comfortable with it. It's clearly helping him. And then you've got someone like Joel Damon, on the other hand, who is just like stubbornly refusing to almost entertain the idea of like what it would seem he would have traditionally considered very woo-woo, kind of like, you know, which a lot of other men that I know would see it that way too. So even though he's had the trauma of, I think, losing his mother and things like that. And I guess the reason I'm bringing this story up is a couple of reasons. I mean, I think one, it's so interesting how as human beings, we have different interests and different things that resonate with us, right? So when I came away from having watched that episode, you know, I would go and talk to a friend on the golf course who would say, you know, I would say, oh, you know, did you see that episode? And what did you think about it? And he was like, oh, well, I actually related more to the one with Matt Fitzpatrick, where he's talking about all his data and analytics and stuff like that, you know, and it's just interesting how we're all different as human beings and we all click with different things. And especially as it relates to this idea of psychology, mental health, spirituality, or whatever else it is. But it also got me to thinking about then, you know, for you and with these mindful training aids, like have you, you maybe haven't, and that's fine, but I just was curious to know, have you intentionally thought about who's your audience? Who's the profile of person that you would want to use these things? Are you trying to convert people, or actually you just are organically allowing it to be picked up by people who really click with it?
Yeah, definitely number two. No, I'm not trying to like, definitely not trying to like, convert people. I've not been great at even like, you know, getting an Instagram ad life to just like work around that to golfers in terms of the target audience. You know? So yeah, I'm not pushing very hard at the moment. Part of that is just to do with like my current lifestyle and situation, and it's whatever. I'm just not interested in pushing it that hard at the moment. I think there's a couple of other things that I'm focusing my time and energy on a little bit more. No, they're just for me. I just kind of like build them for me. I'm definitely not trying to convert anyone. It's a fun thing to do, to even kind of like go through the thought process of putting some structure to something like that, you know, like, what are we actually doing here when we're talking about like mindfulness or wellness or spirituality or any of those things? You're like, what's actually, so it's like trying to put some framework to it, and it's a fun exercise to do for me personally. I guess the interesting thing like about, I definitely haven't pushed it to a wider audience. I think when I do, which I will do at some point, whenever that is in the journey, like I'll start to like get them out there and push them a bit harder. And I think that point will come at some point in the fairly near future.
Yeah.
Cool gift market thing. I think it would open, like, I think I would broadly consider my entire golfing, like the entire gift market, like Father's Day. Like, it's at the very least, it's something a little bit interesting and novel. And I like, again, being anti-screens, I like the old fashioned thing of like, you can actually scan, carry a scorecard and you can have it there in front of your eyes and touch it. And I do like that element of it as well. It's like the old fashioned side of things. So I would say for a golf gift market, it's, maybe there's people that go like, yo, I'm into that. I want to use those. Like, send me a subscription. I want to do this weekly. This is like a part of my practice. You know, I'll do the swing training on the Thursday, and on the Friday I'll do that. And maybe there are people that respond to it like that. But maybe there are people that are just like, I need a Father's Day present, or what, I put in a stocking for a golfer. Like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, potentially quite large, but whatever. And it's not something that I'm like massively like pushing, or that they are novel. They're just like a little bit of fun for the time being. If it were to be pushed, like who knows who it would interest. The thing that like has happened is anyone that gets them. Like, I think for anyone who gets it, like there's almost no need to explain the product or about, you know, you see it and you go like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I got it. That's good. Or if you get it, you get it. Mm-hmm. If you don't, if you're Matthew Fitzpatrick and you're a data guy and like, absolutely, if you're a Bryson DeChambeau, obviously data is a viable format for understanding golf 100%. And like, there are people doing it to like those two guys as examples alone, there's people doing it to a crazy standard. So like, yeah, obviously. But some people it will just resonate with. Some people will, I really like this. That's really nice.
Well, I was going to say, at the time I heard about this product that you have, another thought that occurred to me was like, if you look now, I'm sure you'd be familiar with Journal 18 as a brand. Mm-hmm. And I look at their product. It's like, it's a golfer's journal in so much as, I've yet to use it, and so I can't pass any real judgment on it. But from looking at their Instagram page, it's a cool design. It's like really nice materials. It's like a golf ball textured kind of book. But when you look on the inside of it, it actually, to me, looks more ostensibly like you're recording your scorecard and the data of, you know, what greens and regulation, stuff like that, and actually journaling that rather than journaling. It's not a mindfulness tool as far as I can tell. And I get it. You know, I get what you're trying to do. And that's what I expected you were going to say, that thing about, you know, you get it if you get it. And that's good. But no, I think it's, yeah, looking forward to following your journey and see where it goes. I'm going to lead us into a section in this podcast now, which is about nostalgia. You know, I like to call it golf yourself nostalgic, and to ask you to think about a particularly nostalgic time moment in your life that involves golf and being on a golf course, whether that's on your own or with other people. You used the word nostalgia earlier on in this conversation. So what moment or memory comes to mind in that respect, Rob?
There's quite a few, I guess. They're more also, there are a few. Obviously, the day that I went back to golf after a very long break is one of the kind of like sticks in the mind. And it wasn't particularly like quiet day. There was literally no one on the golf course and so it, but it was kind of a semi-surreal kind of peacefulness out there.
I mean, what were the, if you feel comfortable sharing, I mean, what were the circumstances at that time?
I would say like near total, I don't like the term, but burnout, like just... I was just wiped. I've been working nonstop for 5 years or so as my business partner, and he's he's still going. He's a lot, lot more endurance than I have. But yeah, we were living fairly unhealthy. I'd kind of like slipped into various bad habits in the restaurants and kind of like got caught up in what is the hospitality industry, like to some degree. The rhythm's all out. Yeah, and you're not necessarily taking great care of your physical health. You're drinking an awful lot and doing all the other things that come along with nightlife. And yeah, not necessarily in the healthiest point. And I was just kind of like, yeah, cooked. And so that day, no, it is one of the rounds that kind of like sticks in my head. And it was particularly slow and long. And I kind of like drank it in a little bit extra on that day, having just called into work and going, you know what? And stepping away today, guys. So I just need a day. And so that's one that does stick in mind, but I guess it's not really a nostalgia. I would say I've got there's some other things that I find slightly more nostalgic.
Well, do you know, I mean, if that's the one that comes to mind, that's the one that comes to mind. And I just, again, I'm going to just thank you for sharing that one, because, you know, I on a personal level, I can, you know, an unhealthy relationship with alcohol has definitely been part of my story, and I've been sober from drinking now for almost 5 years, and I've had similar experiences, let's say, of going out on a golf course. In fact, yeah, you know, I talk about how the golf course was the first place I wanted to go when I lost my son. You can be sure that was one of the first places that I wanted to go and did go when I gave up drinking. Because I was, you know, I was really in a mess in my life at that time, and it was the place. It is the place, isn't it? This goes back to this meditative thing, you know. It's, and especially when you're doing it on your own, or in those scenarios, I felt like I had to make sure that if I was going to go out on a golf course with somebody else other than myself, it needed to be someone that gets me and is supportive of me and kind of gets what was going on in my life at that time. And so, if I hear you right, that experience of, I find it incredible to hear that you had that, because in the run up to that, Rob, did you say, was that the first time in quite a long time you'd picked up a golf club, did you say?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would have been like literally 15 years since I'd played golf. Maybe, yeah, played at my brother's wedding once, maybe I picked up some sticks. So, well, I hadn't played golf in a long time, yeah.
And just, I find, like, again, you know, it's, you're playing my jam here, Rob. You know, you're just like, you're sort of tying into the golf yourself. For me, this story about, you know, I just find it interesting, fascinating that you're, one of your first go-to things was, I'm going to go to a golf course, because, you know, I was challenged, kind of, I say challenged, I was speaking to someone yesterday who's going to write a feature article on golf yourself healthy. And he asked me to just clarify this point on, you know, so actually explain yourself here, Chris. Like, how is golf good for you? You know, you're speaking about it in these terms, but can you actually articulate it? I think I was able to, but, you know, how, so anything more you would share? And this isn't pressure to ask you to sort of eke out more, but it's just like, what else comes to mind? Like, you know, kind of, how did you feel? Like, that day, prior to having stepped onto that golf course,
yeah,
versus how you felt when you came off it.
Yeah, like just lighter, I would say, is that it was like, yeah, a huge weight relief. Like, yeah, just an awful lot lighter. And I say it was like a particularly long and slow day. I guess it kind of, I mean, I might be exaggerating slightly in terms of like how little golf up, you know, wasn't I was, but I wasn't playing regular golf, you know, and I'd like, you know, had a couple of dabbles, but no, the golf course was the place and is the place. The reason I said it was like particularly long and slow was like, yeah, I took the time to like, I'm like, you know, really drink it in. And I think the more time you spend out there, yeah, I like the lighter I felt. Like the first tee maybe wasn't particularly light, but like, yeah, certainly the, you know, the 27th hole, I felt an awful lot lighter. And yeah, I think like that's like a weight off. I don't really know. It's obviously got lots to do with, you know, like just like wide open skies and expansive like views of the horizon and that kind of thing. Like there's parts of that just like that part of you inside that just needs to like relax, can just relax, and you can just be like, oh, you know, really at home. Like, I felt, yeah, I just felt a lot lighter, I would say.
Good.
I love the time to think as well.
You played 27 holes. I mean, no messing around. You really got your fix in that day.
Yeah, I played a lot that day. I can't remember exactly how much, but yeah.
Good.
I was there till it was dark. I was pretty sure, yeah. I was like,
the Eagle Has Landed, probably one of my favourite sections of this podcast. You know, talk me through it. You've had time to think about this, I think. So what shot, golf shot, have you hit that lives long in the memory and just makes you feel ace every time you think about it and tell the story?
So the hard question for me, this one, to be perfectly honest, I was struggling with it and I did have a lot of time to think about it. I haven't like played any iconic golf courses and like, you know, hit like an amazing shot into the postage stamp or something. It's like, wow, you know, I did that. You know, like, but I think every round of golf, like I think I hit shots that really surprised myself and I'm like, whoa, that was really good. Like far out good. You're like, whoa, that's crazy. And then I kind of like have this thing where my mind somehow kind of like scrambles to remember that feeling or like what happened or what did I just do or how did that like thing come off so good or like what? And I kind of like, you don't remember the shot that much. Really, I don't know. So like my mind goes into this crazy mode where I'm like, whoa, that was really good. What happened? But that said, so it's like, yeah, I don't have like particular stories that I tell either. You know, I'm not, always like to just, but there are a couple of shots that stick out in my head. Recently went like an attended event that was held by Golf Guru. Matt, I don't know, James Sinclair, really, really lovely guy. Hosted an event in Portugal. Got to meet a load of like kind of Instagram guys over in Portugal and played golf with some really fun and interesting people. It was a great experience. And I was lucky enough to like have a pretty surreal experience there. Can't actually remember the holes, but we went to Westcliff golf courses. The event was also like kind of hosted by these guys, Land of Ride. It was a surf and golf trip. So we're on the coast in Portugal, Westcliff's golf course, which is just incredible, really impressive facility, very beautiful and really challenging golf. And I guess the greens were probably the most ludicrous experience I've ever played in person. Get a sense of what a kind of like really sloping professional tour green might look like and feel like. And you're like, what? This is silly. Like, you're just like, this is farcical. And so there was a few putts, you know, people missing on the wrong side of the green and just leaving themselves putts that were absolutely insane, you know. And like, we were all just laughing about it as amateur golfers. You're like, this is silly. And I was playing, my playing partner kind of like drained this putt. He was a little bit further away than I was, and we were both very far away. I'm not going to say like 35, 40 feet, something like that. And he just had this like vicious downhill crazy putt, and he jarred it from like 40 feet. It's like this, it was nuts. We were like, wow. watching this ball, like, and just having it in slow motion, and it just getting like, you know, got in the slot, picked up speed, came down this hill and was just like, boom, hit the flag straight in.
Did it go off or was it more just like, what just happened?
Everyone screamed. Everyone was like, what? Yeah, no, it went off. Yeah, yeah. We went off. Everybody screamed. We're like, whoa, crazy, yeah. Wild. Oh, great putt. And so I step up and I've got like a similar kind of length putt just after him. And it's this kind of like, it's in between two really huge mounds. I can't remember the whole of the green, but it's like, it was a silly green. And so I've just kind of got this like S-shaped valley between me and the hole. And I'm like, I'll just hit it up the left. It's going to swing up the right. It's going to come back the left. And like, I'm going to do this big like loop-de-loop thing, like S-shaping it through the valley. And I was just like, hit and hope, man, because at this point, we're just like, can't really try to read that thing. And you're just like, just hit this thing. And like, it kind of, again, like the two parts they just found. I'm convinced to this day that like, it's actually like the best green keeping I've ever seen in the world. Because these things hit like pockets and they hit slots. And I watched my ball and it just hit this slot and it went up the other side and back down, up the other side, back down. Up, and it's just like S-shaped, got in the slot, rolled in. And I was like, whoa. And so it was like, and then we also went nuts again. Everybody's just like, nah, crazy. Still on the same green. It was very silly. But like that shot was a lot of fun. And we had this like great, you know, it was the first event I've done like through Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So it was just like a lot of fun. The vibe was good. The people were amazing. Mm. And like that one was super, super cool.
Do you know what I love about the story you've just told? There's a couple of things that come to mind. So I think one is like you getting enjoyment out of other people's shots. This is something that I've heard other guests, so that Alex, who I interviewed at Cleve Hill, again, he described this. It's like similarly when I asked him this kind of question, it's like you know, A, getting enjoyment of other people's shots, like is similar in the story you just told, but also B, I do relate to what you're saying too about if I were asked in a podcast my eagle has landed moment, I think I'd be more inclined to say there are just moments in time. You know, there are shots that happen often in the most objectively modest golf courses. It doesn't need to be at a St. Andrews or wherever kind of thing. You know, I just love the variety of stories that we're getting. So that's really cool. What was the name of the place? Did you say those stories happened at? And was that in Portugal?
Westcliffs. And yeah, Golf Guru app and Land of Ride hosted that. And yeah, I have to shout out Charlie Parklaw on Instagram as well. So he jumped the first part and I kind of like followed him in. So that was another one. that was really, really fun. And I think you're right. Like I talked about it earlier in like hospitality, you know, like creating the vibe. Like we had a great vibe in our group. Like it was a really fun group of people. And like definitely fed off a bit of love.
Love it. We're going to come up the 18th here, Rob, and the last piece I'm going to ask you about is what I've called Cut It Out. So
I love it.
I sense you're going to enjoy this segment. So go on then. What could you cut out of golf if you could have your way?
It's a great question, man. It's a leading one. It's a good one, Chris. It's a good segment. So I did think about it long and hard.
Don't water it down. Come on, Rob, please.
I thought about it from hard. I'm going to do that. I've got a tendency personally towards like being a little bit grumpy. And I was like, determined when I was taking my notes, I was like, yeah, just be nice and be positive. It's very, no. So, you know, I'm just going to give that annoying answer. I wouldn't fucking change a thing. Like, I think golf's, I do think golf's genuinely a super interesting point. I think it's really interesting what's going on in the game right now. Not all of this for me, but let's face it, across the board from the PGA Tour and Live to all the little startups, to all the little individual stories like yours and mine, to all of the clothing brands, to all of the Melbourne golfs, whichever direction you look in, there's really, really positive cool shit happening in the sport. And I think it's amazing and it's interesting and it's great. Do I go in for all of it? Absolutely not. Like some of it, yeah, cool. Take it or leave it. And as we mentioned earlier, there's so many niches within the broader spectrum of golf, and you're really easy to go and like, you know, shit on various parts of it and just be like, no, that's trash and I'm not interested in that and that sucks and live golf with the money and the sad. And, you know, you could like moan and whinge all day if you wanted to about various things that are part of the broader game. But yeah, I'm gonna opt to go that like the most positive answer I can. Like, I really wouldn't change a huge amount about it. It is what it is. It's something different to everybody who's got a relationship with it. It's different to Bryson's, you know, mathematical scientific approach to maybe what Severi Annemeyer's theorist was. That doesn't make anyone more valid than the other. I'm a Severi fan. It doesn't put any more validity on one or the other. And I'm not like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to take the. I would love to whinge and moan about various parts of the things, but I easily could if you got me on the like right day. And that sucks. And I'm not into that. I'm definitely unfollow that. Like. But yeah, no, broadly speaking, like, let's face it, it's in a very good spot. It's really interesting. It's helped me an enormous amount. It's changed the trajectory of my life. And I'm like, no, why change it? Like, here's what it is. It's different games for different people. Let it be.
No, listen, right? Like I was going to joke with you, like you've swerved it. That was the most professional swerve, Teflon, right. Teflon shoulder that I ever...
Election coming, I should just like maybe...
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. That's a great shout. But no, in all seriousness, right? I do actually really like that answer because it kind of helps me to process maybe... some of the feelings I have about golf. I mean, if again, I get more mileage out of the example I gave before, my mate who not would turn his eyes up at, or is rather he doesn't have an interest in the version of golf that I do when I watch an episode of Full Swing and get off on men talking about their feelings and like, you know, engaging with psychologists and stuff. And he's got more of a data and analytics and swing technology vibe going on. That's cool because it's like different strokes for different folks. Yes, that was intentional golf wordplay and I won't apologize for it. And because, yeah, there is something for everyone. And I think that's when I read a golf governing body strategy document that says it's everyone's game, I think both in what I've said and what, especially what you've said there is a good way of looking at it. So when we're off air and when I stop, I hit the stop recording button in a minute, I'll ask you that question again and I'll see the response.
No. Also, I was going to say, I will commit to some kind of answer of that question a little bit more to just like, but maybe like my personal philosophy on things and something that I would like to see change, maybe just more generally across the board. I kind of got a slightly more, as I mentioned earlier, I'm kind of mixed race and, I've got this Asian roots that I go back to, and I feel a little bit more home maybe like in the Eastern culture and the Eastern, maybe sort of like side a little bit more with Eastern philosophies than Western. And I guess I've got this kind of thing about general perception or the general like mechanism of sports in today's culture that I'm like, all of the sports are kind of, massive sales and marketing machines, and they are what they are. They sell out stadiums and sell millions of shirts and whatever sport you look at, that's what they do. They're absolutely gigantic, like the NBA and the NFL and Premier League or whoever, sports are enormous and they're all more or less sold and marketed the same, and they're hugely profitable. Thumbs and I think there is an element of that that makes me slightly sad. So I think what's actually going on in sports is probably very best. I think there's things that we do as humans and as a race and as a species that aren't brilliant, that aren't great. And I think there are things that we do that are great. And I think that the things that we do that are great are quite few in terms of like lists. Like I'm like throw, the arts, sports, I think, like music, writing, throw the arts in together. And I'd throw like sports in there. And I'd be like, that's really the best of humanity right there. People writing literature, people making artwork, people writing songs, and people performing these sports activities. And that's what we all like fill out stadiums to see, because those are magic moments, the things right. That humans do that we all want to see. I guess the thing that would be lovely to change is if those athletes for me should be kind of, less marketable. And I think if we had some Eastern philosophy about sport, they're a bit more guru-like, right? It's like kind of, it's very amazing that they're able to align themselves to these high physical performing acts of excellence. And they requires absolute internal stillness and calm and confidence. And it's a very magical thing what they do, the athletes. And I think it's just a shame the way that I think that the broader sports are marketed and managed, and it's not celebrated as I think what the most beautiful thing about it is. I think the real beauty is like that magic that humans are quite inside wanting to do something. And when I say I hit golf shots that surprise me, I'm like, I just did it. Like I hit one that good. Like I did it. It happened. It was like, and it's surprising. It's like, whoa. And to think that there's people that can do that with most of their golf shots and find that magic is magic. And I just think we don't like look to the true magic of sports. I think we like look at the celebrity and the drama and the big bug and the celebs and the private jets and the sponsors and the Beatles and the live golf payouts. And I just think, that's not what I see in golf. That's the true beautiful stuff. Like I think like what I see in golf, that's the real magic is like,
yeah. Well, actually I think I'm with you to a large degree in this one. And I love that you brought this up, because again, it's funny, like in one of my journals I wrote recently I talked about the notion of growing the game and this trope that gets thrown around all the time, and how, in mainstream golf media, they'll use it in the context of the professional game, right? And mm-hmm. I talked in that article about how, there was one golf influencer on Twitter who was basically saying, after Scottie Scheffler won the Masters, that was, in his view, one of the worst possible outcomes for the PGA Tour, because he's actually not, quote unquote, the most marketable guy. It's going back to your part around the drama. Yeah. And it was interesting, because I was kind of, my argument with it at the time, which is probably not going to pass, curry favor with people now, given all the stuff that's going on with Scottie Scheffler at the moment. But I was trying to make the point that if in this, and to your point around all the money that's in sport, if you consider that we live in an age where the PGA Tour have introduced this player incentive program, which fundamentally means that they will get paid out on how many followers they have, how much content is being created around their name and their brand, it kind of, I don't think that sits all that well with me, because I was trying to make the point that if you look at what Scottie Scheffler stands for as a human being and his, his values and his he's a family man and all that stuff, and yet he's like number seven. He's number one in the world, but he's number seven in this popularity contest. It's an odd one, right? Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that is like the... And look, I mean, that it's also a broader thing than golf for Scottie Scheffler, right? Like, I think that's... Like, I don't follow football. One of the reasons I never really worked in British culture is like, yeah, I don't follow football, but I gather from the things that I do, like pick up that all of these, you know, buying and selling of players between the Saudi, you know, it's just like, it all sounds exactly the same. It just sounds like it. Fairly offensive numbers, and to be 2024 and still living in the world, we're like, we're exacerbating that divide of wealth. There is still parts of the world that are like ludicrously impoverished, and you know, like I'm not suggesting that I've got any desire to like, you know, talk about a broader work. I'm not proposing like a fix for all of human solutions. All of sports, the way that all of it happens, it's all a bit gross, right? It's just like we're not getting to the real good stuff in any of these sports because everything that's sold and presented for it is like, yeah, it's the flashy, explosive, like it's the fast chopping TV edits, it's the like action, it's the like that's what's presented and sold, and the big numbers and the glamour and the sports cars and the, you know, that's gets way, 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 way more coverage than like, well, what are those pros actually doing out there? Like they're experiencing like they're in some sort of like meditative state of performance that's a level that most humans can't access. Like it's an unreal act that they're doing, but it's just not. I mean, yeah, obviously the commentators, you know, great shot here, what a performance, you know, but we're not looking in the right kind of direction, I think, though. You know, it's all that flashing lights to the side that just gets there.
No, and actually, to the point you just made on the meditative state of performance, I, for one, I don't know about you, I find it just miraculous that, guilty or not, Scottie Scheffler, that whole arrest at the PGA Championship, to have been in a jail cell in the morning,
yeah, far out,
to then come out and play the way he did is... That is out of this world. Like that to me is a perfect manifestation of what you've just described, right? So anyway, Rob, I'm going to wrap it up there. I just want to say thank you. I mean, I, for one, I've just thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I hope it's the second, you know, conversation we're having of many over time. And yeah, thank you again.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you very much for having me. It was a blast. That was fun.
Nice.
Look forward to
seeing you. All right, you too. Yeah, take care.
Cheers, buddy. Bye.